Hi, my name's Gary King, and I've assembled the most formidable JFK team on planet Earth. We've got Dr. James Fetzer, Larry Rivera, who is the number one researcher in the world today when it comes to new research, and we've got Don Fox, who's not afraid to look a little bit deeper than anyone else. So if you're interested in what happened to the 35th President of the United States, then I invite you to our show. It's called The New JFK Show. And it's on YouTube. Go to Gary King YouTube channel, and we've got over 90 shows archived for you there. So if you really want to know the truth, and knowing that over 9 out of 10 researchers are working the other side of the street in a sea of disinformation, I pledge to you the truth about JFK. Go to Gary King YouTube channel and find out your true history.
Trump has told Fox and Friends the system is rigged. I think it's perfectly legitimate because the decision was made by these GOP elites, not the people or the delegates. And I think Trump is right. Turns out that this is the year that Americans found out their elections are rigged. I think it's really been stunning that Donald Trump has had an explosive effect. Listen, this is from former President Jimmy Carter. Now it's just an oligarchy with unlimited political bribery being the essence of getting the nomination for president or to elect the president. And the same thing applies to governors and U.S. senators and Congress members. That's a powerful statement from a man who legitimately received the our current president of the United States, who's done nothing but commit acts of aggression abroad and a violation of the Constitution at home since his inauguration. Turns out Trump has a huge lead in New York. His report, this is from the Wall Street Journal, 51%. Kasich, not Cruz, Kasich second with 25, Cruz trailing with 20. A poll by Clear Politics show Trump's lead is actually 54% on the average. It's interesting that Kasich has overtaken Cruz, but Cruz is a big-time loser. I believe Cruz is going to do successively worse and worse as the campaign progresses. What are they going to do to stop Trump? Well, here's one possibility. There turns out to be a new technology that can enable you to change what a person says in real time. They illustrate it by using Trump, Vladimir Putin, and Barack Obama. In this video study, check it out. You can find it online. Terrifying new video technology could be used to deceive and manipulate the public. I believe it's entirely possible they're going to use this technology to have Trump say some very, very bizarre things right on the eve of the New York primary. Look for it. Be prepared for it. Be in a state of disbelief. You know the man. You've heard him plenty of times. If he says something extraordinary, bewildering, that's calculated to depress the turnout for Trump, discount it. This technology means you can no longer believe anything you see as well as anything you hear. And we already know the mainstream media publishes massive quantities of propaganda and disinformation about any number of issues, including, as I have demonstrated, about Sandy Hook in relation to the New York Times, the Washington Post, and even the Chronicle of Higher Education on jamesfetzer.blogspot.com. Turns out that there's been much wailing and gnashing of teeth after Wisconsin, where the presumption has been that Cruz legitimately won. That turns out, in my judgment, not to be the case. And there's quite a lot of evidence to substantiate it. I have just published a blog. Wisconsin was stolen fair and square, progressives in denial, because I'd appeared on a local talk show program on 5 April, the day of the vote here, with Mitch Hank, the second hour, and explained how I knew the election was rigged and what the outcome was going to be. I predicted they'd bring in Cruz ahead of Trump, that they would suppress Bernie's lead over Hillary, and they'd put in place a bimbette by the name of Rebecca Bradley on the Supreme Court to keep it firmly under Walker's control. And that's exactly what happened. There's a massive survey of the different districts here in Wisconsin. This is just to be suggestive that Trump was leading in all eight of the districts. I believe that's an accurate reflection that Trump was leading in all eight of the districts. The claim was that these talk show hosts have been so influential, but anyone who understands Trump voters know that they don't listen to talk show hosts or to the national media or what they read in the newspapers. They believe in the man and what he represents. And the idea of these talk show hosts could have brought about this change is simply absurd. Indeed, it was presaged by a Marquette Law School poll that showed while Trump had been leading heretofore by 10 points over Cruz, now he was lagging behind Cruz by 10 points. That's a 20-point shift. Mark my words, that doesn't happen. Anything short of a nuclear attack isn't going to change minds, especially when they're Trump supporters. So what you see here is district after district, Trump had a major lead, 62-37, 62-30, 63-36, 52-47, and so forth, 66-33, 62-37. I'm convinced this is indicative of what should have happened had it been legitimate. Now, there's been a massive barrage of attacks. While I was on the air with Mitch Hank, the first caller was very sympathetic and wanted to know if I believed that if Trump were elected president, that he'd talk about 9/11 and what really happened. And I told her that I believed that was probably going to be the case. The second was a Republican hack who called in to contest the remark I'd made that Trump has been the most maligned, the most attacked candidate in American history, claiming that Mitt Romney underwent a lot of attacks. But as I pointed out at the time, Romney wasn't being attacked by the Republican Party as well as the Democratic. I mean, it's ridiculous. And here's further confirmation that what I said was correct. From the New York Times, more than half the record spending on negative advertising during the 2016 primary has been directed at a single candidate, Donald J. Trump. A barrage that threatens to undermine his candidacy even as he continues to march toward the Republican nomination. And you'll see that's predicated on the assumption that Trump actually lost Wisconsin. But if you go to my blog, you'll find I lay out the proof that, in fact, it was stolen. In fact, Richard Charnin, a brilliant statistician with whom I've collaborated in the past about the Walker versus Burke contest, which was also stolen, has reported that at least five elections have been stolen in Wisconsin, including the Walker recall campaign election, one for the state Supreme Court between a guy named Prosser and a woman very distinguished named Kloppenberg, then the contest with Mary Burke, and now the 2016. So there's a pattern here in Wisconsin leading me to conclude that Wisconsin appears to be politically even more corrupt than Connecticut, which is saying something because everyone from the governor to the state police to the Newtown police, to the Newtown school board, and a host of other actors playing roles were involved in the Sandy Hook hoax, which went upward to the Attorney General Eric Holder and ultimately Barack Obama. Notice here in this article, it reports that the more than $132 million spent on negative ads, nearly $70 million has gone to commercials assailing Mr. Trump, according to a New York Times analysis of data. So I think this substantiates the point I made in response to the hack. Interestingly, the third call was from a woman who served as an election official in Milwaukee County during the contest with Mary Burke, and who said she found the charts that Richard Charman had presented for the vote in Milwaukee County very disturbing. They began with Mary getting up to 80% of the vote to 20 for Walker, but then they leveled off. And it wound up that the greater the number of votes cast, the greater the percentage that went to Walker, which is simply absurd when we had a bastion of Democratic support and there was an historic turnout. And what she found funny about the graphs is that she reported that the precinct votes are being presented or recorded in a random order. And therefore, there should have been a lot of spikes and jiggles in the graph, which are not present, which is further proof that the election was indeed stolen. David Stockman, who was the director of office and management and budget in the Reagan administration, says that Wall Street and the Washington establishment are petrified, that was his word, by Donald Trump. I was really quite stunned when 2 or 3 weeks ago, a financial expert came onto Fox Business News and reported that if Trump were elected, the consequences for the country would be on the scale of those when FDR introduced the New Deal. This is very, very significant and striking. I go back and forth between Fox, MSNBC, and occasionally CNN to see if I do adversity of points of view. And I was very glad I caught that, so that it looks like David Stockman is actually right on the money. Now, if you want to talk about a horror story here and bias in the press, the Boston Globe on Sunday published a cover saying, deportations to begin. President Trump calls for tripling of ICE force. Riots continue. Markets sink as trade wars loom. U.S. soldiers refuse orders to kill ISIS family members. This is about as disgusting as it gets. Think about it. A newspaper, particularly one of the quality that in the past has been associated with the Boston Globe, is expected to cover the news, not to make it. The newspapers are supposed to be objective. They're not to be partisan. So here you have a political bias making news by the Boston Globe, completely disgusting, particularly when you consider that this is the same newspaper that provided the historical research reported in the film Spotlight, which was awarded the best picture of the year last year. The true story of how the Boston Globe uncovered the massive scandal of child molestation. It's disgusting indeed. And cover up within the local Catholic archdiocese, shaking the entire Catholic Church to its core. It's a brilliant film. If you haven't seen it, you definitely want to, even if it's in the cheap theaters now. This is a must-see. Because now you're going to see how much the Boston Globe has sunk. During the Boston Marathon, where we have the third observance, some would say anniversary, but when it's a charade of this caliber, a hoax, I prefer to describe it as an observance rather than an anniversary. During the marathon bombing 3 years ago on April 15th, the Boston Globe was tweeting, breaking news, police will have a controlled demolition on 600 block on Boylston Street. And a second tweet, officials, there will be a controlled explosion opposite the library within 1 minute as part of bomb squad activities. Well, guess what? 1 minute later, there was an explosion opposite the Boston Public Library. We also have video where you can hear the police on bullhorns in the background calling out, this is a drill. This is a drill. So people won't get too alarmed when the unusual things take place. Notice. Already, the police knew, they're calling out on bullhorns that this is a drill. The Boston Globe knew, they were talking about setting off demonstration bombs for the benefit of bomb squad activities during the marathon. Now, what's fascinating about these bombs is they didn't seem to have much explosive force. I'm a former artillery officer in the Marine Corps, and I tell you, those bombs weren't powerful enough to kill anyone. Now, more notably, look here through the smoke at some of the bodies at the scene of the second explosion, which has by far received the most attention. And I'll come back to it, but notice there's a man in a hoodie there who's working on a man who supposedly had his legs blown off by the name of Jeff Bauman. I'll return to that. But look at what is so startling. There is no blood. Dr. Lorraine Day, who was in charge of trauma surgery for San Francisco General Hospital for 25 years, has observed, this is a physiological impossibility. If these individuals had actually lost limbs, arms or legs, for example, there would have been blood all over the place. But there isn't. Here's another photograph in a sequence. In fact, in the new book I've just published entitled, And Nobody Died in Boston Either, I have 350 photographs, 350 photographs, a dozen contributors, 440 pages. you can understand the whole event from beginning to end. Notice there is no blood. And there's a man on the left because the fellow in the hoodie was attaching a false bone extension. You see it there? But there is no blood. This was to make it look as though it had been a more horrifying event. But there is no blood. Here now, blood finally starts to show up. And look at the middle. There you have Jeff Bauman again holding his head up. Because this is a sidewalk, people spit on the sidewalk. He didn't want to put his head on the sidewalk. If he'd actually just had his legs blown off, I can assure you, he wouldn't be showing so much discretion. But the fact is, from the bleed out, had these wounds been serious, been real, you would be unconscious in 1 minute, dead in two. Notice the color of the blood. It's not real. Here's a sample of real blood from a bomb in Cairo. Because real blood deoxygenates and turns dark. But this blood is Hollywood blood. It came out of tubes. And believe it or not, we even have photographs where you can see the tubes in which it came from. Now, a Hollywood producer and director by the name of Nathan Foulkes was the first to suggest to me that that not only was there fake blood, but that the smoke had come from a machine. And believe it or not, we've been able to discover the smoke machine, which is indicated by the arrow here, which I regarded as such importance that I put a photograph of it on the back cover. Now you'll begin to appreciate why I gave a subtitle to this book, State-Sponsored Terrorism with Hollywood Special Effects. We're dealing with amputee crisis actors. We're dealing with fake Hollywood blood. We're even dealing with smoke machines. And while the claim has been made that some 260 were injured there, if you go back and study these photographs, it doesn't look like there's more than a dozen or 15 at the center of all of this attention and activity. Let me tell you how bad it is. There was no surge of EMTs to the scene. There was no string of ambulances to rush the injured off to hospitals, just like Sandy Hook. No surge of EMTs into the building. No string of ambulances to rush their little bodies off to hospitals either. And in Boston, would you believe the police kept two priests who wanted to rush to administer last rites to those who were apparently injured and on the verge of death. And the claim has been made that three died, though it's obvious none did during the marathon. But they weren't allowed. Can you imagine in Catholic Boston, Catholic priests not being allowed to rush to a crowd of presumptively injured bystanders for the simple reason that they would have observed they weren't really injured and blown their cover. Now, here you have a man in a cowboy hat by the name of Carlos Arredondo, whom Nathan Foulkes had identified as an actor that he cast in one of his own films. Here you have the man with presumably the legs blown off below the knee with a phony bone extension, who calls himself Jeff Bauman. We've been able to identify him as Nick Voigt, who was in fact a veteran who lost his legs in Iraq or Afghanistan and a digit. He also lost one of his fingers. So it's particularly important in keeping these things straight that you realize that Jeff Bauman number one only has 9 fingers. And believe me, it took enough time to get him in a wheelchair, which you'd never do, with a person suffering from these injuries, that if his injuries had been real, he would already be dead. Now get this. Here's Jeff Bauman number two. 19 days later in a Boston Bruins hockey game, you had a second Jeff Bauman waving a Boston Bruins flag. He looks real healthy. Compare the face. It's not the same guy. Notice the legs. Now they're cut off above the knee. I had a very interesting conversation with Dr. Stan Monteith, now deceased, who was himself an orthopedic surgeon, who explained he'd performed amputations like this himself, and that it took at least 3 months to recover from the amputation and then another 3 to learn how to get around without your legs. But this guy looks just completely as happy as he can be, and now notice he's missing his legs above the knee, and he has 10 fingers. Very much to my astonishment, Gary King was featured on the show and talked about a third Jeff Bauman, the existence of which I was unaware when I edited and nobody died in Boston either. Look here, the gall they have. They bring Carlos Arredondo out to escort the third Jeff Bauman, and notice he doesn't have any legs at all. He doesn't even have any thighs. So you had the first Jeff Bauman with his legs cut up below the knee, the second above the knee, the third doesn't even have any thighs. Now, if anyone believes any of this is real, just let them go online to Boston Strong, the three Jeff Baumans, which is my conversation with Gary King about these three crisis actors, amputee actors. And it will turn out that they, like others, were handsomely rewarded. Here's the Justice Department issuing $8.4 million for Boston Marathon victims. Those who are unaware may not appreciate that the Sandy Hook participants made out like bandits. Sympathetic but gullible Americans contributed anywhere from $27 to $130 million to their donation sites for the 26 families. That means each of those families made in excess of $1 million. In addition, there was a grant rather like this of $2.3 million to be divided among the police officers and others who played minor roles in relation to playing out the script at Sandy Hook, where, by the way, we even have found the FEMA manual for the event with a rehearsal on the 13th going live on the 14th. Where many of the participants became confused about the dates and even put up donation websites already on the 13th, the day before the event, and where Adam Lanza's initial date of death was recorded in the Social Security Death Index event as having happened on the 13th, making his feat in shooting 20 children and 6 adults the following day all the more remarkable. Well, here we have a book from American Free Press, a review of it. Book alleges Boston Marathon bombing was a massive government false flag. Dr. James Fetzer and a bevy of contributors voiced their opinion on third anniversary of the attack. There really isn't any doubt about it. We were able to prove conclusively that the school had been closed by 2008, that there were no children there, that it was a drill presented as a live event to promote gun control. The school was in terrible condition. It was loaded with asbestos and biohazards. It appears in 2008, the school district had to make a decision whether to upgrade the school to bring it into compliance with Americans for Disability Act requirements, which would have been very expensive. The school was not only laden with all those problems, it had suffered substantial water damage from past hurricanes. It was moldy. There were weeds everywhere. Some of the walls were cracked. There was stains and damage inside. All completely disgusting. If you look at the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, in Chapter 7, you'll find 50 photographs of the furnishing of the Lanza home, which appears to have been empty. It was in a high real estate area, and they filled it with cheap furniture, some of which is some of the photographs are fairly astounding. And in Chapter 8, 50 more photographs of refurbishing the school in order for it to serve as a prop, including even the moving vans. You'll see the nameplates for classrooms still having the moving tags on them. And you'll see when the SWAT team is there already, but the string of windows, four windows in Classroom 10 are undamaged. The flag is at full mast. There's crime scene tape up for a crime that is yet to be committed. And Wayne Carver is there with his arms folded, awaiting the arrival of his portable mortuary tent. If you want more about Wayne Carver, go online, find the YouTube entitled Sandy Hook Starring Wayne Carver as the Medical Examiner. It'll blow you away. If you've had any doubts about Sandy Hook, that should seal the case for the hoax. Here's the second page of the review in American Free Press. I'm very pleased. There's the cover of the book. You can't see the back where I put the photograph of the smoke machine, but it's all there. Now, here, just to show how they keep up with the propaganda, this appeared on April 11th, 2 days ago, Monday, in the USA Today. This is a guy named Joseph Murphy, who describes himself as an assistant professor at some obscure college. and claims he was there at the time. Well, I'll just tell you, if he was there at the time, he knows nobody died at the Boston Marathon because it was an elaborate and complete charade. I'd love to get this guy on my show to interrogate him because he's participating in an elaborate cover-up and fraud on the American people. Now, New York, the New York Times has been upset because Bernie and Hillary are going at it fairly fiercely. It's not going to end anytime soon. Bernie has the moral high ground. Hillary really is a very wicked piece of work. And I want to convince you of some points about Hillary. Bernie and the Donald share many common positions. They are both opposed to NAFTA and the TPP, where NAFTA has gutted our manufacturing and industrial base. The TPP would put in place a board of corporate attorneys that could override the laws and statutes of any nation among the 14 Pacific Rim that are covered thereby, including our own Constitution. Oh, you didn't know? Obama hasn't told you that if the TPP is ratified by the Senate, the United States will no longer be a sovereign nation? Well, believe me, that is the case. Bernie and Donald also are opposed to those wars in the Middle East. They think it was a huge mistake. Bernie voted against the Iraq war. Hillary voted for it. Donald only wishes we could retrieve the $4 to $5 trillion we spent turning the Middle East into chaos because it could have been used to support our own infrastructure, roads, bridges for public education. They are on the high ground. Hillary, however, by contrast, at Dartmouth just last year, announced that if she were president, that she would bomb Iran to oblivion. This is absolutely awful. I can't begin to tell you. She already knows that Iran had nothing to do with nuclear weapons. Our own intelligence agencies, all 16, concluded that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons in 2007, a conclusion it reaffirmed in 2011. Even the Mossad concluded that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons in 2012, just 3 weeks before Bibi Netanyahu went to the United Nations and announced precisely the opposite. Indeed, Iran is a peace-loving nation that has not attacked any other nation since 1775. Think about it. 1775 was about a dozen years before the ratification of the Constitution began in 1787, 2 years before George Washington was inaugurated. So for longer than the United States has existed as a constitutional republic, Iran has not attacked any other nation. I would only wish that were true of the United States. Now, it turns out the Inspector General of the State Department has concluded that the Clinton emails have intelligence from our most secret classified programs. This is very serious stuff. Indeed, the State Department announced it was withholding in toto, in their entirety, some 22 Clinton emails and 7 strings because they were classified top secrets. The documents were not merely redacted or blacked out. They were completely withheld. One source not authorized to speak on the record suggested the intelligence agencies are operating on the assumption there are more copies of the Clinton emails out there and that even releasing a partial email would provide enough clues to trace back to the original, which could allow the identification of special access programs intelligence. Well, get this. These emails also reveal the true motives for attacking Libya, where Muammar Gaddafi was sharing the wealth of the nation with the Libyan people. He was providing national health care, national public education. If you had a medical problem, couldn't be solved in Libya, they would fly you and a relative or friend anywhere in the world to have it treated, all expense paid by the government. They had national warehouses where anyone indeed could go to obtain food, compliments of the government. He was giving $45,000 gifts to newly married couples. He was also introducing, building the great waterworks project that would have turned North Africa into a veritable oasis, but also the gold dinar, which have rapidly become the currency of all of Africa. It turns out that Hillary's emails reveal the true motives have nothing to do with the claim that Gaddafi was abusing the people. In fact, there was virtually no crime in Libya. The people were very happy. It was nearly an idyllic society. He was a dictator, yes, but he was a benevolent dictator. He was even going to receive a humanitarian award from the United Nations a week later. Hillary moved the attack on Libya, the slaughter of the Libyan people, the brutal death of Muammar Gaddafi, for two reasons that were revealed in the emails. One, the Western banking interests were upset by the introduction of the gold dinar, which they feared would become rapidly the currency of all of Africa. And the French were troubled that Gaddafi was going to extend his influence over Africa, which they wanted to keep as a private French preserve. This is what's in the Hillary Clinton emails. Bernie gave her a free pass. That was a calamitous blunder. He's got to come back to the real issues here. Now, Obama is trying to help Hillary out of a very sticky wicket. So he's explaining that there's classified and there's stuff that's really top secret. Then there's just stuff being presented to the president or secretary of state. This is completely disgusting. He's exerting his own influence here in what should be an independent investigation. He claims, but obviously falsely, I can guarantee that. I guarantee there is no political influence in any investigation conducted by the Justice Department, full stop, period. But in even making these statements, he's participating. He's influencing the investigation. Bob Woodward, who with Carl Bernstein exposed the Watergate scandal in their book, All the President's Men, has observed that Obama has turned the Clinton email scandal into a political issue instead of a criminal one. He has let her off the hook. Hillary has done very bad things with these emails. They're very damning. You have to understand what's going on here. It's startling. In addition, and this is quite fascinating, Jimmy Carter has been asked to reflect on Hillary Clinton's accomplishments as a Secretary of State. And he has explained that she took very little action, that she had an undistinguished performance as Secretary of State, and that it's John Kerry who's actually been carrying the heavy water for the Department of State as her successor, that Kerry frequently consults with Carter, and that he's making notable contributions, and he's a man for whom he has great admiration. Believe it or not, well, you might hear that Donald was well-known because he did The Apprentice, was a reality television figure. There's a series that has been running on television for years now entitled Madam Secretary that is obviously based on Hillary Clinton. They got a woman playing the key role who looks rather like Hillary in a somewhat more glamorous version. If you watch any of it, you see the episodes are clearly modeled after the period of time when she was Secretary of State. This is another illustration of you got a newspaper like the Boston Globe attacking Trump with a phony cover. Here you got CBS running a glamorized version of a female Secretary of State mauled after Hillary Clinton. This is all disgusting stuff. Now, it turns out George Soros has been playing a role behind the scenes, and he seems to have been funding a number of protests, for example, that were directed against Donald Trump, and seems to be benefiting Hillary Clinton. Well, mark my words, George Soros is going to expect to have a key role in policy decisions in a Hillary Clinton administration. That is not good news. In addition, Hillary has come out repeatedly to describe gun owners, American gun owners, as terrorists. This is shocking. This article should be read by everyone because there's a third issue on which Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders stand together, which is their defense of the Second Amendment. Hillary is not only bloodthirsty, she's not only in bed with Wall Street. Remember, she had a whole succession of $250,000 speeches. Bernie has made a point of it. She won't release that. What is she covering up? How can you take millions from Wall Street and not expect they're going to get something in return? And here she's gone off the deep end with regard to gun control, describing American gun owners as terrorists. This is so shocking. It's absolutely unbelievable. Check out this article, Hillary Clinton, American gun owners are terrorists. You aren't going to believe your eyes. In addition now, John Rappaport has published his own version of what the front page of a paper would look like if Hillary became president. Here are some of the lines from his front page. Hillary: I love the smell of Benghazi in the morning. President Rodham Clinton admits she and Bill had a long death list, states, what difference at this point does it make? President Clinton takes off the gloves. The cocaine flowed like water at the MENA airport. So what? Hillary installs Huma as first lady, and they have long been reported to have a very special relationship. Hillary turns Department of Agriculture over to Monsanto. It's simpler. Where if the TPP is passed, food can't even be labeled if it's genetically modified, where Monsanto, for example, added an insecticide gene to its corn to get a greater yield out of the field. But it turns out when that corn is fed to laboratory rats, they become sterile in 6 months. Well, the same thing is going to happen to the men of the United States from consuming Monsanto corn. So Hillary turns Department of Agriculture over to Monsanto. It's simpler. Hillary: why are globalist trade treaties a problem? Turns out I'm really good at putting Americans out of work. Hillary admits she knew Bill was abusing women for decades. It didn't seem to bother him. Bill Clinton was kicked out of Oxford for raping a fellow student. Hillary has been a facilitator. She has aided and abetted him by going after the women who were sexually abused by her husband in order to protect him from legal or other actions they might take. We even had a recent report from a former Miss Arkansas who explained that Bill used to sneak out when Hillary was asleep, come to her home, prance around in her flimsy black nightie and snort cocaine from a women's compact he had with him to carry his own stash. Check it out. Roger Stone, the Clintons' war on women. You're not going to believe it. And here we have a report from Robert Perry, who's an extremely thoughtful guy. He's a real investigative journalist, and he's reporting about the state of American journalism. Listen, mainstream U.S. journalism has completely lost its way, especially in dealing with foreign policy issues, where bias now overwhelms any commitment to facts, a dangerous development, writes Robert Perry. Let me give you one illustration. Judicial Watch was able to obtain documents under Freedom of Information Act requests from the Defense Intelligence Agency that revealed that the agency created ISIS in 2012 to put more pressure on the Assad government of Syria and to pave the way for the expansion of Israel to become the greater Israel to which it has always aspired, dominating the Middle East from the Tigris, Euphrates to the Nile. We created ISIS. If you want more proof, check out the article I published, in fact, in Iran Review, entitled How We Know ISIS Was Made in the USA. You're going to be startled because we have photographs of ISIS members sporting U.S. Army tattoos. We have the video that was hacked from an aide to Senator John McCain showing the filming of the fake beheading videos on a soundstage in Tel Aviv or even in Hollywood. We have the reports the Iraqi army shot down two UK cargo planes providing supplies to ISIS. And a week later, Iraqi popular forces shot down an American helicopter doing the same. This is the reason why Obama has been reluctant to attack ISIS. And I got to tell you, I'm very troubled by sending B-52s to the Middle East because it's ostensibly to attack ISIS, but I do not believe it. This is, I think, a reason why we've just had a couple of Soviet fighters passing over American warships. Putin isn't going to stand down here. If we start flying B-52s over Syria, they're going to be shot down. Mark my words. And we've had a whole host of drone pilots who are leaving the military because Obama will not allow them to attack ISIS, no doubt out of a sense of guilt because he created ISIS, and now he doesn't want to feel responsible for killing them. Turns out there are signs that we might have a nuclear false flag attack on Chicago. This is extremely troubling. Carl Herman published this. Check it out. Article documenting in April 6, 2016, Chicago Tribune report, 3,000 millionaires leaving Chicago in the last year. Article documenting predictive programming of a nuclear attack on Chicago. Multiple articles documenting unusual use of government false flag attacks to herd the population into compliance. This is very, very troubling. This is the predictive programming in a film called Brick Mansions. At the 62-minute mark in the film, just after showing an image of a nuclear missile pointed at the downtown core of the city, there's a massive zoom-out shot, but the further the camera zooms out for the shot, the more obvious it is that this is the city of Chicago and not the city of Detroit. There's been predictive programming about 9/11 and a host of other attacks. This is profoundly troubling. It was always very strange that Rahm Emanuel would leave serving as chief of staff to the president of the United States and go to Chicago as mayor. Maybe we're seeing now what's going to be playing out and why he has been there. There's been an attempt to disqualify Ted Cruz. It looks very much as though Cruz does not qualify as a natural-born citizen. The Constitution only has three requirements for president. You have to be 35 years of age, have lived at least 14 years in the United States, and be a natural-born citizen, whereas it appears that Cruz is actually naturalized rather than natural-born. This issue has taken a turn because a judge at a low level has ruled that he is eligible, but from what I've read about the case, he actually didn't dig deeply into it, look for the kinds of documentation that would be decisive, not even the birth certificate for Ted Cruz, where we know that these things can be faked. The Obama Hawaiian birth certificate is a fake. One of two birth certificates from Kenya is a fake. The other, however, appears to be bona fide. So here's a law center. The North American Law Center has issued an ultimatum to the Ted Cruz campaign. If he continues on, we're going to release the files we have 2 weeks from tonight and bury Ted Cruz forever in American politics. We shall see what will come to pass. But I believe this is a very real issue. Ben Carson has questioned the media about Obama's sealed records. He says, the American people are starting to wake up to your game. In fact, that early attacks on Donald Trump revolved about the fact that he questioned whether Obama was a natural-born citizen of the United States. And based upon my own research, there appear to be good reasons for raising those questions. So here's a recent press conference during which reporters tried to pigeonhole Ben Carson into saying that he had gotten a scholarship. Carson took the bull by the horns and flipped the script on the dishonest media, telling them the American people are waking up to their game. Carson brought Barack Obama into the mix and told reporters he did not remember this level of scrutiny when Obama was running. Additionally, Carson asked the press why they are not concerned why Barack Obama's records are sealed. He questioned Obama's attendance at Columbia University. Now, here is a copy of what appears to be the actual authentic Barack Obama birth certificate from Kenya. It appears to me the actual story is the following. Barack Obama was born in Kenya. He was raised in Indonesia. He came to the United States and attended school on scholarships that were only available to foreign citizens. This is why his first act as president was to seal all of his records, just at the point where every little boy and girl in the country wanted to study the life story of our first black president. This is all shocking, but it appears to lay a precedent for Ted Cruz or even Marco Rubio, about whom similar questions have been raised as to whether or not they actually are bona fide, qualified to run for president of the United States. Because Ted Cruz is the last best hope of the Republican Party for stopping Barack Obama, I have no doubt that they're going to come to his aid They're not going to make any effort to determine whether it is true. In particular, they'll make no effort to falsify his claim to be eligible to run for the presidency of the United States, because they're counting on Ted, which is truly astounding given that Ted Cruz is the most disliked member of the United States Senate. I actually believe that there are going to be exposés about Cruz and his sexual predilections, where Wayne Madsen, no less, has reported that when Cruz was an undergraduate at Princeton, he would dress in women's clothing to enter sororities to watch women walk back and forth to the shower. This is unbelievable and very embarrassing, because I am also a graduate of Princeton. But when I was an undergraduate, it was all men. This story, and Wayne Madsen is among our very best investigative journalists, sets the stage for understanding why he might have a whole proliferation of mistresses, and where it turns out that he's actually, his Senate office was a subscriber to the Ashley Madison adultery newsletter that has millions of subscribers for those who want to engage in adultery, and where the attorney for Palfrey, the D.C. madam, has requested that the courts relieve him of the obligation not to release the records in her little black book because they're a matter of national security. I discussed this with Jeff Rentz on his show a week or so ago. And Jeff explained to me that he already had possession of the records, and indeed it is Ted Cruz who is named there. In another rather striking development, the Washington Times fired a columnist by the name of Drew Johnson after he tweeted that he could confirm that at least two of the mistresses identified by the National Enquirer were accurate. And yet this weekend, I observed an interview between Megyn Kelly and Ted Cruz's wife, in which he was dismissing all of this as nonsense. I suppose we could say, what else is she going to do? But it appears to be quite real, and I believe it's going to catch up with Ted Cruz, and he's going to be dead meat as a Republican candidate, for the reason that it contradicts his whole persona, his whole position, where he holds himself out as a paragon of morality and virtue, and as a representative of evangelical Christianity. Well, I have had a hard time figuring out where evangelical Christians endorse adultery and serial affairs like this. So I believe that Ted Cruz is not destined to be the ultimate method for defeating Donald Trump. That's going to require other stratagems, of which I've sketched a few. Now, there's a Republican businessman who's challenging Paul Ryan for his congressional seat. This is very interesting. Ryan has been very specific in denying that he is willing to serve as a candidate for president of the United States. He has made statements that are quite emphatic, in which I actually believe look as though they are definitive, saying he would not accept the nomination of his party for president of the United States, that the nominee should be someone who actually ran for the office, that he chose not to run for the office, that he wants to remain as Speaker of the House. But we have a fellow down here in Janesville, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump from my own residence near Madison, Wisconsin, who's going to file to run against Paul Ryan, who's upset and wants to channel anti-establishment anger against the top elected Republican in the country, who, by the way, will be chairing the Republican conference in Cleveland. Others aren't believing what Ryan is saying. Here's an article very recent. Are you ready for President Paul Ryan? Why we desperately need a Plan C? Here he's suggesting the Democratic Party is teetering on the brink. The Greenpeace social justice community needs a Plan C. The Republicans have one. The Democrats don't. The impacts could be catastrophic. Consider. Both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders have serious handicaps for reaching the presidency. By your own admission, Hillary is an ineffective campaigner with serious negatives among young activists and the general voting population. Long considered an ace in the hole for her campaign, Bill's presence on the stump has been problematic at best. There are continual rumors of a pending Clinton indictment. about what remains is unclear, but such an event would obviously impede or destroy her candidacy. Now, we've been talking about Sandy Hook. There's been an effort to obtain documents that were allegedly from the home of Adam Lanza. I've already explained we have 50 photographs that home was merely a prop. But here's a judge who's playing along. Another contribution to the elaborate deception involving the state of Connecticut, where until I discovered that the elections have been stolen 5 times here in the state of Wisconsin, I regarded Connecticut as the most corrupt in the union. Now I believe Wisconsin holds that distinction. They were seeking an alleged spreadsheet of mass killings that Lanza was supposed to have created. When we go through all the photographs of the house, however, this would require a monumental printer. There's no monumental printer in the house. It's really quite ridiculous. He's supposed to have had a spiral bone notebook called the Big Book of Granny. That appears to be a fabrication, too. All the evidence suggests that Adam Lanza is nothing but a creature of fiction. But just as we have this assistant professor who claims he was there at the Marathon bombing, the beat goes on. The government is unrelenting in presenting nonsense to substantiate its psyops. Here's a very amusing cartoon from Speed Bump. I love this game. The little boy says, looking at the game, connect the invisible dots. Title, Conspiracy Theorist as a Child. I love it. Very funny. But this is why you want to go online and look at why I, Jim Fetzer, am a conspiracy theorist. I make no bones about it. There are better words, phrases, or expressions, such as conspiracy realist, conspiracy analyst. This came about because I was interviewed by the BBC to come on a show where they wanted to talk about my research into conspiracies, and where I did a preliminary interview, a pre-interview of the interview. And the pre-interview was just chock full of evidence, arguments, points, especially about the assassination of JFK. And I liked it so much that even though when the actual interview was conducted, the host who was interviewing me, and this is for the BBC, it was undoubtedly an intel op. I mean, I have no doubt about it, as I'll explain. Was frustrated because I was pointing out the massive evidence that nobody had died at Sandy Hook, how the school had been closed by 2008, that there were no children there, that the famous photograph that was sent around the world that appears to be of a policewoman escorting a string of 15 kids to safety actually was staged, that there is a second photograph taken from further back, which actually appear in time to be taken before the one that was sent around the world, which shows a whole string of 6 or 8 parents there with their arms folded, their hands in their pockets, looking on while the policewoman rearranges the kids in the sequence to get a better shot. So that the second photograph, which most of you will have never seen before, which I put on the very back cover of Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, along with a photograph that was sent around the world, shows a little girl in a pink sweater and a short skirt, whereas the photograph sent around the world has a little boy in a dark sweater and blue jeans. And if you zoom in, you'll see at the back of the line, even the one that was sent around the world, there are two women in the background looking on very casually at what's taking place, leading me to refer to them as lounging at the massacre. So we have all kinds of indications that this was a fraud. We even have the manual. Some of the substantiation for my points about the rehearsal being on the 13th include the sign, everyone must check in, porta potties present already, pizza cartons and bottled water at the firehouse. It's standard for a FEMA manual that they provide refreshments and restrooms. It says right in the manual, everyone must check in. There are lots of parties there who have name tags on lanyards, standard FEMA drill. The name tags are color coded so that they correspond to the different levels of participation in the drill. Parents bringing children to the scene. Can anyone in their wildest dreams imagine a parent bringing a child to the scene of an actual child shooting massacre? No, of course not. This was the rehearsal. It was the day before, and they were treating it as a festive occasion. We even have dash cam footage for the locations and the times where the evacuation of the other children was supposed to be taking place, according to the official police reports. And guess what? There's nothing there. You've heard it said you can't prove a negative, but that's simply false. You could go to your living room right now and look for signs of the presence of elephant. And if you find no signs of the presence of elephant, you have proven there's no elephant in your living room. That's a negative. You can look for signs of evacuation at the times and locations that was supposed to be taking place. If there's no signs of an evacuation taking place, that's because there was no evacuation taking place. I want to close by announcing, for the benefit of anyone in the vicinity, that Kevin Barrett and I, who have had a reconciliation, and we're now on the False Flag Weekly News, which has moved to Friday from Thursday. I'm a special campaign correspondent. I began last week with a one-year review of the news developments in the campaign, where this week it will be very similar to what you've just heard here. But he and I will be at the Sequoia Public Library, 4340 Tokay Boulevard in Madison, this Saturday, April 16th, 10 a.m. to noon, free and open to the public. Kevin will be talking about his two books, We Are Not Charlie Hebdo, and Paris, Another False Flag. I, about Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, and Nobody Died in Boston either. If any of you are in the vicinity, I'd love to see you there. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. Stand by for the new JFK show with Gary King, Don Fox, and Larry Rivera.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving, and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
Less than 3% of you people read books, because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets, turn them off now, turn them off and leave them off.
Now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
Welcome to the new JFK show number 99. All right, we've got the most cutting edge JFK research that there could ever possibly be. Now, just when you thought that you'd pretty much heard everything in the JFK assassination, well, get ready to be floored. So we've got some evidence. Larry's looked into it with a little facial recognition stuff or maybe overlays, but we're going to turn it over to Dr. Fetzer here, who has some new revelations about Ted Cruz.
Well, Gary, it's more than that. Our last meeting, we were talking about the forthcoming primary in Wisconsin before it had occurred. Now that it's taking place, we need to review what we've learned about it and whether we were right or wrong in our surmise about what take place. Here, as you can see in the first slide, Ted Cruz was reported to have won Wisconsin GOP primary pressuring Donald Trump. Tonight is a turning point, he declared to cheering supporters in Milwaukee. It is a rallying cry. It is a call from the hardworking men and women of Wisconsin to the people of America. We have a choice, a real choice, except when you look at the evidence, the election was rigged. It was stolen to put Cruz ahead of Trump. It's very embarrassing. You have the numbers. I was actually in a local talk show studio the day of the primary and explaining why it appeared to be rigged, and the evidence has borne me out. Here we go now. Wisconsin adds momentum to the Sanders revolution. He's supposed to have surged to a 56.5 to 43.1% victory, but that's really a whole lot less than what he'd been winning by 70 to 30 and such for the several elections up to this. So I was suggesting that they were seeking to suppress Bernie's lead over Hillary. They were trying to put Trump out of business by promoting Cruz over Trump, and also on the side seeking to elevate, well, I don't know if I'd call her a bimbette, but she appears to be a personal friend of Scott Walker to the Supreme Court, where he is appointed her to three court appointments in 3 years. And if they don't have a personal relationship, none of it makes any sense because she's completely unqualified, in my opinion. So what do we have? Well, we got the report of Ted Cruz leapfrogging Donald Trump in a Marquette poll. Now, this is significant because Trump had been leading by 10 points before the poll. All of a sudden, he's behind by 10 points. That's a 20-point shift. That just does not happen absent some catastrophic event like a nuclear attack, especially with Trump supporters who are very dedicated and most unlikely to change their minds. And indeed, here is me at the Mitch Hanks show where I was talking all about this and explaining how the signs were there that this was a rigged election. I talked about my previous research, Rich Arnon, including this article, Voter Fraud versus Election Theft, Scott Walker's Wisconsin Reelection, which was presaged by a similar poll from the Marquette School of Law claiming that Scott Walker had taken a 53-47 lead over Mary Burke, who is a very popular Democratic candidate. There was lots of enthusiasm on the Democratic side. They had brought in Michelle Obama twice, Barack once, Bill Clinton, even the big dog himself. There was a tremendous surge of enthusiasm on the Democratic side and historic turnout. That, of course, traditionally favors the Democrats. And yet, when it was all said and done, believe it or not, Scott Walker had won by that very same margin of 53-47. When Richard Charnin studied the election, he discovered that it was only the latest of 5 different elections that had been stolen here in Wisconsin using these electronic voting machines. You can check him out where I invited him to come on the Real Deal episode number 183, Richard Charnin on stealing elections, where we also have along the way loose ends from the D. Eugenio shows. But what's important is illustrated here. In Milwaukee County, a bastion of Democratic support. Notice how the initial polls were really dramatic, 80% for Burke, only 20% for Walker. But as the evening went on, the more the number of votes that were cast, the greater the percentage that went for Walker. That is clear proof that the election was being managed and engineered. I had 3 phone calls while I was on the air. The first from a woman who was enthusiastic about Trump, who wanted to know if I thought that he might reveal what had happened on 9/11. And I explained I had a lot of background in that area, having founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth in December of 2005, and that I believed that Trump, yes, would reveal information about 9/11 if he were elected. The second was from a Republican hack who was taking exception to my observation that Trump was the most maligned and attacked candidate in American history. He was suggesting that Mitt Romney had suffered a lot of attacks, but that was ridiculous. I pointed out Mitt Romney wasn't being attacked by his own party the way that Donald Trump is. Donald Trump is getting it from both sides. That wasn't true of Mitt Romney. And the third was by far the most interesting. This was from a woman who had been a poll official in Milwaukee County who told me that she was disturbed when she looked at the plot here because they were bringing in their reports from the polls from the precincts in a random order. And therefore, there should have been a lot of jagged ups and downs here, which you don't see, further confirming that the election had been stolen. Well, here's what it was officially supposed to be. Cruz over Trump by 48.3-35.1 over Kasich with 14, and Sanders 56.5 over 43. God, you got a win down there, my friend. Mute your mic, Don. Yeah, thank you. This was from a woman who was actually in a precinct in northeastern Wisconsin, who watched this happen and kept these records. The exit polls there were 49 for Trump, 28 for Cruz, 13 for Kasich. The absentee vote paralleled, 59% for Trump, 28% for Cruz, 13 for Kasich. And in the case of Sanders, 62 absentee, very close. Clinton, 37, 38. But look at the machine votes. Trump was dumped down by about 10 points to 50. Cruz was bumped up by 10 points to 38. Kasich was deprived of two. In the case of Sanders, he was bumped down to 55. Clinton was bumped up to 45. Just exactly what I was predicting would take place. There was a very interesting talk, commentary about it, that the fact that Trump is much more popular with the American people than they are reporting is a fact that the opposition Marxist groups, the George Soros-backed MoveOn.org, Black Lives Matter, and the Democratic candidates have not chosen to disrupt Cruz or Kasich campaigns. If they were running neck and neck or Cruz were in front, one would expect his rallies to receive some of the attention. They aren't. It's all about stopping Donald Trump for a reason. They're in on the scam. Now, here was a website that was keeping continuous polling of what was going on right up to the time of the election. If you go to isidewith.com for the 2016 presidential election, Donald Trump versus Ted Cruz, you can move your cursor on the map, and it will give you the results of the polls for the eight different districts, in Wisconsin. And get this, in every single district, Donald Trump had a significant margin in district. And all of these, or almost all of them, had a larger sample population than supported the Marquette poll, which only had like 957. District 1, for example, had 1,132. Trump, 62.1. Cruz, 37.9. District 2, 1,123. Trump, 62.3. Cruz, 37.7. District 3, 1,353. Trump, 63.3. Cruz, 36.7. District 4, only 605, but still it was Trump, 52.9 to 47.1. District 5, 1,242, 53.9 to 46.1. 6, 888, 57.3 to 42.7. District 7, 1,031, 66.9 to 33.1. Finally, District 8, 1,377, 62.2 to 37.8. Trump should have won every single precinct. And it would have been a winner take all for Donald Trump with 42 more. Here is someone who was tabulating the early returns as they were coming in, and look how close they are to those longer term poll results. District 1, 66 to 35, 66 to 34, 67 to 34, 58 to 42. In every case, you have Donald Trump prevailing over Ted Cruz. So they clearly stole the election. There's just no room for doubt about it. And what was their, and when Richard Charnin did a probability analysis of the primary, he found that Sanders should have beat Clinton by 68 to 32. That's the kind of margin they wanted to avoid because it gave Bernie such a headwind of winning like seven contests in a row by enormous margins. Here would have been an enormous margin, making Hillary look like she's a lame duck, like she's an also-ran, like she's not even in the contest. And that would have prevailed in the public mind for the 2 weeks until the New York campaign takes place. They claimed, and this was their cover story, the talk radio hosts had such a powerful role here in Wisconsin that they were able to squelch, to stem the rise of Trump, the Trump train. This guy, Charlie Sykes, who has been on television repeatedly, he's as arrogant as they come. He's claiming that they put down Donald Trump because the bombastic New Yorkers hadn't understood Wisconsin's tradition of civility and decency. Well, this is ridiculous. Stealing elections, Richard Charnin has demonstrated, 5 recent elections in Wisconsin have been stolen, including Scott Walker's recall election, including a campaign pitting a Supreme Court Justice Kloppenberg against another named Posser for the Chief Justice, including his success over Mary Burke, and now this election here pitting Donald Trump against Ted Cruz. We are a state that I believe now is the most corrupt in the union, with the possible exception of Connecticut, where everyone from the governor down to the school board of Newtown was involved in the Sandy Hook scam. Now, because of all this, Hillary Clinton has become very alarmed, and they have devised a new strategy. Forget the base, disqualify Sanders. And they went about attacking Bernie Sanders as being unqualified. Bernie was magnificent and ferocious in response. He said, anyone who takes millions of dollars from Wall Street is not qualified to be president. Anyone who voted for the war in Iraq and support these endless wars in the Middle East is not qualified to be president. Anyone who is backing the corporations because of these free trade agreements is not qualified to be president. And he's right on across the board. In fact, these are issues where Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are on the same side of the issue. They both repudiate these corporate advancing free trade agreements, where the TPP, for example, would put in place a corporation, a board of corporate attorneys that have the right to override the laws and statutes of any of the member nations that are covered by the TPP, all 14 Pacific Rim nations, including the United States, up to and including the Constitution. Barack Obama hasn't wanted the world to know, especially not the American public. But the TPP creates a board of super warriors that can trump the Constitution. In addition, it gives corporations the right to sue if a project they want to undertake violates local environmental or pollution safeguards. They can sue the entity that blocked it for the amount of money they would have made in profits had they been able to go forward with it. How outrageous is that? A third example is that food will not be allowed to be labeled, so that you won't know if this is Monsanto genetically modified corn, for example, where Monsanto added an insecticide gene to the corn to get a greater yield of crops when they harvest. But it turns out this corn, when fed to laboratory mice, they become sterile within 6 months. The same will happen to human consumers. If that's something you want, then I recommend genetically modified corn. If you want to maintain your potency with regard to reproduction, you want to avoid it. Now, another tack she has taken is represented by the newspaper in the center here, Bernie Sandy Hook Shame. She has implied that because Bernie Sanders is opposing legislation that would allow parents of the Sandy Hook children to file a lawsuit against Remington for manufacturing the weapons that allegedly were used. She's claiming that that is abusive on Bernie's part, that he's heartless and doesn't appreciate the victims. The whole thing is a complete scam, however, because even if you took for granted that Adam Lanza had actually shot 20 kids and 6 adults, he stole the weapons from his mother. He did not buy them himself. The fact of the matter is that the alcohol, tobacco, firearms expert assigned to investigate found no indication that either of them had ever been engaged in any marksmanship training at any rifle range or gun club anywhere in the vicinity. It's all a farce, but Hillary has to know better. She's simply trying to put Bernie in a bind, and it isn't working. It seems to be backfiring. Bernie observed that he thought it was in very poor taste and inappropriate to politicize a tragedy. But Hillary has to know more. She has to know the whole thing was a scam. It was organized by Barack Obama and Eric Holder, attorney general at the time. He went to Connecticut. He visited with the governor of Connecticut on the 27th of November 2012, just 2 weeks and a couple of days before the event at Sandy Hook. It was a two-day FEMA drill. We even have the manual for the drill with a rehearsal on the 13th, going live on the 14th. Some of the participants were so confused, they actually put up donation websites already the day before the alleged shooting. And where Adam Lanza's date of death was initially recorded as having happened on the 13th in the Social Security Death Index, making his feet and shooting 20 kids and 6 adults the following day all the more remarkable. I published a book about it with 13 contributors, 425 pages, 250 photographs. We proved conclusively that the school had been closed by 2008. It was going to have to come into compliance with American for Disability Act requirements that would have required a major overhaul It was a school that was badly damaged from weather, hurricanes. It was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards. They decided it wasn't worth it, and they abandoned the school. And we have demonstrated this in spades, a dozen different ways. That means there was no children there for Adam Lanza to have shot. We have gone so far, for example, as to look at the locations and the times in the parking lot when the evacuation was supposed to have been taking place. And guess what? There's no one there when you look at the dash cam footage from those locations in those times. An elaborate scam. Hillary has to know. This one seems to be backfiring on her. Now look at the image on the left to Ted Cruz, who insulted New Yorkers when he attacked Donald Trump for having New York values. Well, New Yorkers are not real happy with Ted Cruz and whatever it is he represents. So they've suggested he take the FU train, Ted. And in fact, there's an image here you can't quite see by his hand where they have previously run a cover where the Statue of Liberty is giving Ted Cruz a very familiar gesture with the hand. And they put that on the cover of the New York Daily News. Now, it's interesting in relation to Sandy Hook that the New York, the Daily News is supposed to be the repository. They're supposed to have received copies of the death certificates for the Sandy Hook children, which we have been unable to obtain. The only one we have in hand is from Lenny Posner, which he claimed to be the death certificate for his son, Noah. Noah's a most unusual little boy, however, because he's not only reported to have died at Sandy Hook on 14 December 2012, but 2 years later on 16 December 2014 in Pakistan. So his young boy seems to have died twice. In addition, in Kelly Watt, who has her own commercial and home cleaning service, and noticed in a photograph from the Nancy Lanza bedroom in Chapter 7, where we have 50 photographs of them furnishing the Lanza home to serve as a prop. It appears to have been an empty house in a high real estate value neighborhood, but they put in cheap furniture. She noticed in the Nancy Lanza bedroom where you can see some blood, some red stuff on the bed, but it's clearly not blood. It's not in copious quantity. It looks to me to be raspberry jam. This is where Adam is supposed to have shot his mother in the head four times with a .22 caliber rifle. If you look down at the foot, there's a wooden chest that has paperwork on it, which we find in many of the other photographs because they were keeping records of how they were arranging the house and putting the furnishings. And Kelly noticed that below the leg of the bed, there's a blue moving pad that in their haste, they forgot to remove. Well, Kelly had over 100 hours of conversation with Lenny Posner and told him she didn't believe a word he said. She didn't believe he had a son. She didn't believe his son died at Sandy Hook. He couldn't provide any proof. He only hung up on her when she told him she thought he was in it for the money. He did, however, send her a copy of what he claimed was Adam Lanza's Noah Posner's death certificate, which turned out to be a Photoshop of a real death certificate bottom, but the top half is fake. It doesn't even have a serial number, a file number for the death certificate. It has the wrong estimated time of death as 11 a.m. when the shooting took place between 9:30 and 9:35. If his son Noah had actually died, he would have had a real death certificate. The way they've skated the death certificate issue is by claiming they sent him to the Daily News, but we can't get him. The only one we have is a fake, clearly indicative. The whole thing is a fraud. And now Ted Cruz, showing up in New York, is getting a very brutal reception. For example, in the Bronx, he was heckled and razzed over his decriment of New York values. He's not going to fare well in New York. And the most recent poll I saw showed that Trump had a lead of 52% over Kasich, who had 25, and Cruz down to 14. Now, I believe they may make an effort to steal the election in New York, but after Wisconsin, the Trump people have to be on their guard. This is a very nasty ballpark. It looks to me like his lead is going to be so huge it'll be tough to steal, but look at what happened in Wisconsin. He had monster leads, and yet they use these Diebold voting machines to steal it. It's blatant, it's obvious, and I think it may go on in New York. Now, Cruz has a problem because the National Enquirer published an expose that this man, who poses as a paragon of moral virtue, who claims to represent evangelical Christians, has had affairs with five different women, including a hooker, a teacher, and several co-workers. Now, this becomes important because there's a whole lot of corroborating evidence. For example, Ted Cruz's Senate email address was a subscriber to the Ashley Madison adultery dating service, which has 37 million subscribers. It was hacked by a group calling itself the Impact Team, and they released the information. Ted Cruz's office was a subscriber.
If you're going to be a public official like that, why don't you get a Gmail or something, you know? What a moron. Just right on that grounds alone right there, he's just too stupid to be the president of the United States.
Well, you're going to love this, Don. The attorney for the D.C. madam, who is Deborah Jean Palfrey, who had this escort service for high rollers in Washington, D.C., prominent officials and all that, is eager to have the courts relieve him of the obligation to suppress her black book. He claims it has information vital to the nation's interest involving this campaign. No one thinks that he's talking about the name of Bernie Sanders. No one thinks he's talking about the name of Donald Trump. No one thinks he's talking about the name of John Kasich. And while Hillary has problems of her own, where Bill Clinton, for example, has observed that Hillary has had more women than he had himself, it turns out that, indeed, it's correct that Ted Cruz's name is there. I was on the air with Jeff Rentz talking about this last night, and afterwards he sent me a copy of the entries from the phone records showing that Cruz was indeed a patron of the D.C. madam. Here, in addition, we have the Washington Times firing a columnist for confirming two of Ted Cruz's alleged mistresses, a fellow named Drew Johnson, coming clean. From what I know, at least two of the women named as Cruz mistresses by the National Enquirer are accurate. So here's someone, Mag Time asks, so reporters knew but said nothing? Lots heard rumors, he replied. An online media outlet knew the whole story, but they chose not to run with it. Well, the fact is that I heard two reporters on national news broadcasts confirm that the story had been around a lot. It was shopped to the New York Times, the Washington Post, ABC, NBC, CBS, but none of them were willing to run with it. And indeed, it seems the story is completely authentic. And although Cruz has claimed it came from Trump, the reporters explained, no, that it actually had come from supporters of Marco Rubio, so that Trump really had nothing to do with this. Now, ordinarily, it might not have much impact on a candidate. I think if it turned out that Trump had had some affair, nobody would care. He's had multiple wives. It's obvious he's fooled around lots in his life, but no one would care. Anyone would be dumbfounded if it were true of Bernie Sanders, but that's just not going to happen. That's not Bernie. Kasich turns out to have his own problem, which I'm going to address momentarily. But get this. We also have the revelation of these Panama Papers, showing that a lot of high flyers were storing away vast sums of money. And guess what? Guess which presidential candidate has ties to the just-released Panama Papers? Scandal follows the Clintons like stink follows garbage. Now add yet another smelly situation to Hillary's long list of campaign concerns, including the FBI investigation into Emailgate, the congressional investigation into Bill Benghazi, Bill Clinton's decidedly subpar performances on the trail, and Bernie Sanders' better-than-expected backing by Democrat primary and caucus voters. But, and this is the shocker to which Gary King was alluding in the beginning, Wayne Madsen, who may be our nation's leading investigative journalist, has just released a report showing a photograph which he believes shows the father of Ted Cruz, Rafael Cruz, with Lee Oswald in New Orleans when he was handing out the Fair Play for Cuba pamphlets, which led to an interaction with anti-Castro's supporters that was recorded on television. The cameras just happened to be there. He wound up on the radio talking about it to enhance his credentials. I think we were all blown away by this revelation. And let me look at one more image. Here is Ted Cruz with his father, where Raphael with his son at a FreedomWorks event in Salt Lake City in 2013. Now, what's crucial about this is that the op was a CIA op. So that if, in fact, this is Raphael Cruz with Lee Oswald in New Orleans, then he appears to be tied into the CIA and thereby to the assassination of JFK. And I'm very interested to have your reaction to this development because, frankly, it's rather mind-blowing.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you right now, when I received this information, you know, it just blew me away. Obviously, the similarity.
A little louder, Larry.
I'm sorry. The similarity is very, very striking between the individuals. I've tried to do some photogrammetric analysis on these images. And the preliminary results are that it's inconclusive. However, there is more work to be done on this. However, this is the information that Mattson has provided. It just goes hand in hand with what we already knew about the exiles in New Orleans and Dallas, you know, going back and forth, and how they were involved in this anti-Castro movement and trying to remove Castro at all costs, which the extreme, we know, Judy Berry Baker was involved in the manufacturing of a biological cancer weapon to remove Castro. However, this image and this information that we have received really goes way and beyond, because these Cuban exiles, I need to talk about a little about this, that they were so pro-American and the American dream, you know, and coming out to the U.S., you know, and being you know, and capitalism and everything, you know, and being anti-Castro and anti-communism, you know, and they went to different points of the United States, for example, New Orleans, Miami, San Juan, Puerto Rico. You know, if you look at Sylvia Odio, when she left Cuba, she ended up in the southern town of Ponce, Puerto Rico. And I've done a lot of investigating about Sylvia Odio. And she happened to have been living in supposedly destitute. However, she was living in a very affluent urbanization in Ponce, and she had been she was being protected by one of the top families coming out of Cuba, the Ferre family. As you know, Maurice Ferre was the mayor of Miami. And so this whole structure of the exiles moving to all of these different areas in the United States, especially in Puerto Rico, where they had been protected and they had been provided a haven where they could move, you know, leaving Cuba and establish themselves in Puerto Rico. Now, going back to the situation with Cruz, I believe that the chasing the American dream and everything, and what Mattson has revealed, where he had been, we think, an operative of the CIA, but then he ends up going to Canada at an age of 28. He divorces his wife, and under very strange circumstances, according to Mattson.
Are we talking about Raphael, or are we talking about?
Yeah, Raphael. Raphael.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. And under very strange circumstances, and then he leaves New Orleans and Dallas, and he ends up in Calgary, of all places. I mean, you're from the Caribbean, you're from Cuba. You know, the last place you want to end up is in Calgary, Canada, you know, where you only see the sun maybe four months, you know, in the year. Okay. So, and these are all very strange circumstances, Jim. And the image that they want to project as being pro-American and everything, and then all of a sudden in 1968, you know, he abandons the U.S. You know, when the Vietnam War is at its peak, and that leaves a very, very strange set of circumstances here.
Well, you know, it's interesting that the qualification to be president are really only three. Or run for the office, that you must be 35 years of age, you must have lived in the United States for at least 14 years, and you must be a natural born citizen. And that entails either being born in the United States or having parents who were citizens at the time you were born. And it doesn't appear to be true of Ted Cruz, just as it was untrue of Marco Rubio. So I'm very disturbed by what's going on here by parties running candidates who don't even seem to satisfy the bare requirements of the office.
Qualified, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what they told us in school anyway.
Ron, I want to get you in here. I know you got a lot to say. Please join us.
Okay. I just wanted to weigh in with this anti-Castro Cuban thing. Again, I'll reiterate, people, hey, why are you guys still talking about JFK? Well, look, there's nothing new under the sun, folks. The stuff they were doing back then is what's going on now. And I'm going to harken back again to Michael Collins Piper's book, Final Judgment. And this is from the premise or the preface. I'm sorry. He quotes another book, Coup d'etat in America, first published in 1975. And he stumbled upon a reference in there, and it said that, quote, after the assassination, an informer for the Secret Service and the FBI who had infiltrated a Cuban exile group and was in the process of selling them machine guns reported that on November 21st, 1963, he was told, we now have plenty of money. Our new backers are the Jews as soon as they take care of JFK. This man had furnished reliable information in the past.
Homer Echeverria.
Coup d'etat in America?
Yep. Yeah.
Homer Echeverria.
That's pretty stunning all by itself, Don.
That's Homer Echeverria, who you're quoting.
Yep. So,
wow.
So there you go. So, and then look at Ted Cruz's wife. Where does she work?
Goldman Sachs.
That's what I'm talking about. So
turns out Ted Cruz was actually part of the legal team that stole the election for George W. Bush in Florida.
So, you can't really call the man a traitor because he's not a natural born American. So he is a subversive, agent. He's a foreign agent operating in this country running for president.
He's a very strange candidate. No one in the Senate likes him. Those who are supporting him are holding their nose. It's clear they're only supporting him because they think it's a way to stop Trump. Trump is doing so much good, and I've got to recommend, there's a completely brilliant article that just appeared today by a philosopher from Canada by the name of John McMurtry, talking about the deeper and profound significance of the Trump movement and why it's so threatening to the status quo. I was struck by his study, which is just a masterpiece. I put it on my blog at jamesfetzer.blogspot.com. I put it on my Facebook page. It's been published by Global Research. It's been published by DC Clothesline. It's on his own blog. Everyone has to read this because it brings a home what I heard in an abbreviated version from a financial expert who was featured on Fox Business News about 2.5 weeks ago, who reported that if Trump were inaugurated, he'd bring about changes to the United States and would be as revolutionary as when FDR introduced the New Deal.
Jim, I just wanted to mention, let's not forget the 18-hour diatribe of green eggs and ham by Cruz a couple of years ago. How can we forget that?
Shutting down the government?
Yeah.
I know, he's a very strange guy, and, it does appear he may represent, a special segment. He may be the Zionist candidate in this campaign.
Yeah, that's exactly, bingo, ding, 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 ding. That's exactly.
I think that's also true of Hillary, by the way.
Yeah, I think they're losing confidence in Hillary, though, and that's why they're pushing Ted, whose real name is Raphael, by the way. Ted is,
He's named after his father?
Yeah, he is, yeah. Yeah, his real name is Raphael.
Right, he's named after his father.
That's pretty damn interesting, too, all by itself.
Well, I attended a couple of Trump rallies just to see for myself, and they were very well attended. It was standing room only, and there were cars everywhere. And I also attended the Cruz rallies, and those were basically unattended unless it was the press. They only had press people and a few Republican Party members, but there were no people there who were coming out to see. So, but they actually saw.
I wanted to also mention that if Rafael Cruz is the person that we think he is in the images out of the trademark mark with Lee Oswald, then our two good friends from New Orleans, the two Carloses, Carlos Bringier and Carlos Quiroga, I'm sure know this guy and were very well acquainted with them, you know, with the old DRA and the AMSPEL and all these
yes.
organizations, you know.
Yes.
Of New Orleans that were trying to infiltrate and get rid of Castro back in the day.
Don, did you want to add? Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, and remember, the New Orleans connection was also, you know, the Clay Shaw Perm Index connection.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And with
tying into the Bronfen family Toronto.
Yep. Yeah, and you had Guy Bannister, Private Eye was involved in that. And I think even Lansky's crime family, had quite a bit of influence there in New Orleans.
This is a damned interesting, intriguing development, isn't it? I mean, really amazing.
Well, we got the Bushes in Dealey Plaza. We got both of them. And now we've got, it just seems like it's, part of your pathway to success. Is to be somewhere around the JFK assassination.
Yeah, if you help in taking JFK out, then your future is assured. It would appear truly outrageous, Don.
Yeah, being involved in the JFK assassination means you got your ticket punched.
That's amazing. Well, let me proceed a little further because Larry has been doing some comparisons using this photograph, which is supposed to be Raphael as a reference point. And Larry, I believe you regard this as not really quite adequate to do the job.
Well, it seems to be a photograph of a very young Rafael Cruz, perhaps in his fourth year of high school, you know.
Yeah, this looks like a high school senior photograph. It does,
right.
Very much.
Ancestors, which was a province, you know, in Cuba. And then you know, that's the basis of comparison that we have to compare with the trademark photograph.
Right.
However, some very interesting comparisons that we have been able to do, establishing interpupillary distance and everything. It requires a little bit more of study.
Tell us about these efforts to do a preliminary analysis, Joe. Tell me when I should advance to the next.
Yeah, as we have done in the past, establishing, you know, a grid over the subject photographs and images, you know, and trying to set the interpupillary distance with the grid.
To the same scale, so you can compare them. Yeah.
Right, right. And then if you go on to the next, we will go on and establish, you know, little by little from I think we've done from 0 to 20 to 40% here.
Yes.
Yeah, and then it seems like the distance, interpupillary distance, once we establish those, there might be a small difference, you know, obviously because of the age difference, but the distance between the nose and the upper lip seem to be the same, and the eyebrows seem to match. It's very interesting. More, like I said, you know, more research needs to be done here. It's not something that we can discard right away, as we have been able to do in other studies where
right.
we have been able to say, hey, it's not him. You know, here it seems like there
as,
might be.
As we've been able to disqualify Lovelady from being Doorman.
Right, 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 right. And other studies that we have done, for example, the Rabin study, where right away we were able to discard that. But here it seems like there might be some potential, Jim.
Well, it's really quite fascinating, Larry, and I love what you've done with all these photographic studies. I think they're true major contributions to JFK research, and here you're doing it again. I think we need more reference photographs of a Raphael at an adult stage of his life, because he was still a teenager in the photograph we're using now.
And again, the trademarked photo is very blurry because it's not the best. There, yeah, that's a very good example there. We've had to really blow it up, like I said, but it's very interesting that, you know, a lot of the features seem to overall match. And maybe if we can get better quality of images from the trademark, we'd be able to ascertain, you know, something a little better. But it's very interesting. It's not discarded, you know, like I'm saying.
Discarded at all. You haven't been able to disprove it.
Right, right.
Yeah. I mean,
it's in the ballpark. Let's just say that it's in the ballpark.
It's in the ballpark. So this is a loose confirmation, but we'd like a more exact one. Now, right. you mentioned to me that Judith Gary Baker thinks that Raphael's too short. Could you expand on that? What is she saying?
No, that the individual in the trademarked photograph which shows Lee passing out the leaflets is too short. Now, let me backtrack a little bit and mention that we had already done a portion of a program where we had spoken about this same footage, and there was an individual. If you look at in the left here,
Michael Payne.
Exactly.
Yeah, Michael Payne.
Identified as Michael Payne, probably.
And where, Chauncey on the right, you just see his right arm.
That's right. Chauncey on the right, and where Michael Payne apparently is seen, you know, crossing the camera in the foreground, where that image has been obliterated in some way. There's been some kind of messing around, you know, with the individual images from that film. In fact, we have even seen some streaks of black color coming down his cheek, where it seems like they have been on purpose obfuscated, so to speak. So,
Michael Payne is a known CIA operative.
Right. He and Ruth have both been tied to the CIA, where Ruth arranged for Lee to get the job at the book depository about 2 weeks before the event would take place.
That's right.
Major players in the whole event.
Yeah, and his employment with Bell Helicopter, you know, the Bell Corporation, and when they intercepted a phone call between Michael Payne and Ruth Payne, he said, "We all know, we both know who's involved in this. We all know about that."
Pretty fascinating stuff. Well, it's remarkable that, you know, a presidential campaign should lead to a tie back to Lee Oswald in New Orleans in 1963.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here's another development that shows the party is against Trump. This guy, Rince Priebus, has already explained that they won't turn over the Republican National Committee to Trump if he wins the nomination. This is a complete reversal of policy in the past. When Mitt Romney won, for example, they turned over to him the apparatus of the Republican National Committee so he could use it to advance his nomination in attempt to capture the presidency. But Rince is not going to do that in the case of Trump, which is rather shocking. Here's something else very interesting. He's been under pressure about this idea of a brokered convention, and he has affirmed definitively that the Republican candidate will be one of the three who are running now. But we know it doesn't want Donald Trump. Nobody likes Ted Cruz. And it's very clear he's hinting that the nominee that the party is going to select is John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, which is why it's important to consider a couple of additional points vis-a-vis Kasich, namely that George Soros gave Kasich $700,000 to stay in the race. This is particularly important because a Princeton professor just a few weeks ago explained that as long as Kasich stayed in the race, that Trump's probability of securing the nomination was over 90%. But if Kasich withdrew, it would drop to only 50. And now, perhaps even more importantly, it looks as though Kasich has a sex scandal about to explode, which turns out that he has spent much of his life living with a gay man, associating with known homosexuals. And it looks very much as though this man may be another one of these Republican pro-family closeted gays. And the reason it's important, of course, is because if he actually is gay, but it's not publicly known, then he's amenable to blackmail and manipulation in the office of the presidency. Personally, I don't care if someone's straight or gay. I believe in different strokes for different folks. But we have to know the truth about our candidates for the presidency of the United States.
This guy seems to be perfect for the job. Everybody else seems to be pedophiles.
So he's right in there pitching, huh?
He's not perfect.
Do you want to add further thoughts?
Yeah, you mean Emperor Palpatine gave him $700,000 to remain in the race?
I know. Isn't that an interesting comparison there? You know, this is
I think it's right on the money.
This is a very dark presence, and I think it's suitable. Soros apparently gave some 50, maybe even $500 million to destabilize Ukraine. He's reported to have supported the riots in Ferguson. And it looks
George Soros, the
MoveOn.org and Black Lives Matter to disrupt Trump rallies. I hadn't got around to mentioning it, but when Trump spoke here in Janesville, which is Paul Ryan's hometown, it's only a 25-minute drive south of my own residence. They had protesters there who were being paid $15 an hour to protest. We also have a report from Arizona that a protester there was paid $3,500 to protest Trump by blocking the highway, and he was told that if anyone asked, that he should say he but he's actually paid by the Hillary Clinton people. So this has really descended into a snake pit of vipers and a lot of dirty politics.
Yeah, the GOP will not, they have rules, but they will not follow the rules. In Louisiana, we had a 3/4 majority, and they all of the committees and all that, they were not turned over to the Ron Paul people. So the fact that Trump may be the phenomenon and the choice of the people doesn't mean anything to the GOP. And like I said before, we gave over our delegate process the last time when it seemed to be working. But the people that were working by the rules actually had success in the Republican Party, so they just changed the rules. So the idea that there's some sort of way of us voting and making things happen by our choice is a fallacy. And as far as Ted Cruz, there is no one that says more often that we will defend Israel at all costs. So he is the Israeli candidate. And as far as Bernie Sanders, he's a dual citizen as well. So if something happens to Hillary Clinton, well, we have a dual citizen waiting in the wings right there.
Those are good points, Gary. Don, Larry, would you like to talk about this?
I just wanted to mention, you know, now in this modern era, you know, of voting, you know, the electronic system that is in place lends itself, you know, to so much, you know, manipulation. And it seems to me that we've gone way, way beyond, you know, the time of the tickets, you know, where the chats, you know, were involved in, for example, like in Florida in the year 2000, you know, but nothing has changed, okay, where, you know, election can be manipulated, you know, electronically, just the same as they have always been.
All these electronic voting machine companies are owned by people with affiliation to the GOP. None of them is owned by anyone who's a Democrat. And in Ohio in 2004, but when W was running against John Kerry, they actually had a sophisticated operation where the raw data was being sent to a basement operation in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where Karl Rove was massaging the numbers and then sending them back to Kent Blackwell, who was not only the Secretary of State of Ohio, but was the co-chairman of the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign. How's that for a slick operation?
Exactly my point. Exactly. So, It seems to me that it's like business as usual, you know. So, you know, do people, when they go vote, you know, are they really, you know, getting involved, you know, in voting for, you know, whoever, you know, it is that they're voting for. It just seems like, you know, we're not getting anywhere.
I just want to mention for those who want to see more about the candidates, I did a Real Deal episode number 185 of Trump versus Hillary versus Cruz, which was followed by Gary King on the three Jeff Baumans. It's really terrific stuff, where Gary pointed out to me, which I did not already know, that there were not only the two Jeff Baumans, the first one who only had nine fingers and who had allegedly lost his legs below the knee, then the second Jeff Bauman, who has 10 fingers, and 19 days later shows up the Bruins hockey game with his legs lost above the knee. And then there's a third Jeff Bauman they trot out at a baseball game who doesn't even have any thighs. He has no legs at all. He's got 10 fingers, but no legs at all. Gary, you did a great job on that. I'm just blown away by this additional proof of the fraud known as the Boston bombing.
Yeah. Like I said, that kind of evidence is not the free fall rate times X squared. It's nine fingers one week and 10 the next. That's my kind of evidence.
And legs missing below the knee, then above the knee, then no legs at all. It's really shocking.
Yeah, you said that the disappearing legs. He had a stomp with no foot. And
no tourniquet.
He just had thighs.
That's right.
And no fingers, nine
like
fingers.
That,
it's just crazy.
With injuries like that from the bleeding out, he would have been unconscious in 1 minute, dead in two. Instead, he's lying there for 5 or 10 minutes until they decide to put him in a wheelchair. Exactly the wrong thing. Meanwhile, a false prosthesis with a bone extension has been attached by a man in a hoodie. And when they put him in the wheelchair, the vibrations are so great they cause the false prosthesis to fall off. They have to stop and reattach it.
And we have a video of blood remains.
The blatancy of all this is unbelievable. Don, you want to throw in that 2 cents?
Yeah, before we wrap it up, I just wanted to say that it sure looks to me like the people that were behind the JFK assassination are now pushing Ted Cruz to be your new president.
Yeah, that's pretty disturbing. Let me just have one final slide. Kevin Barrett and I have had a reconciliation. We are going to be joining together to give an event as conspiracy authors at the public library, Sequoia Public Library in Madison at 4340 Tokay Avenue on Saturday, April 16th. That's a day after the third observance of the Boston bombing, which occurred on the 15th, of course. And Kevin will be talking about his two books, We Are Not Charlie Hebdo and Paris, Another False Flag. I'll be talking about Nobody Died at Sandy Hook and Nobody Died in Boston either at 10 a.m. to noon. Free of charge. Everyone's welcome to come. I just wanted to add this so that any of our followers didn't miss the fact that we're going to be there on that occasion.
I think that's wonderful information that Kevin Barrett and you, Dr. Fetzer, have buried the hatchet. That is, really, really very happy to hear that.
Well, I was on the False Flag Weekly News as a special campaign correspondent. So after the first hour with him and Tony Hall, I did an hour on the campaign covering many, but also more of the issues that we discussed here, but not, of course, going into such detail about Ted Cruz and his father, Raphael, and the dimensions related to JFK we've covered here. Any last words?
Well, like I said, that information has gone around the globe. You know, I've received a ton of emails on that, and let the chips fall where they may.
That's fascinating. I'm sure we'll return to it. Don, any final word?
Don, you're muted.
You're muted.
Sorry,
you're mute.
That. Okay, yeah, here we go. Okay, yeah, sorry about that. It looks like the people that were behind the JFK assassination are now actively taking a role in preventing Trump from getting to the White House.
Pretty damn fascinating, isn't it? Gary, do you want to take us out?
I just want to say stay tuned, because we're going to find out if one of the presidential candidates' father was standing side by side with Lee Harvey Oswald handing out Fair Play for Cuba committee pamphlets. Oh, my God. We'll see you next week for our 100th show. All right. Thank you, Dr. Fetzer, Larry Rivera, Don Fox, myself, and Chance in the engineer's chair. We thank you again, brother. We couldn't do it without you.
Hi, my name's Gary King, and I've assembled the most formidable JFK team on planet Earth. We've got Dr. James Fetzer, Larry Rivera, who is the number one researcher in the world today when it comes to new research, and we've got Don Fox, who's not afraid to look a little bit deeper than anyone else. So if you're interested in what happened to the 35th President of the United States, then I invite you to our show. It's called The New JFK Show, and it's on YouTube. Go to Gary King YouTube channel, and we've got over 90 shows archived for you there. So if you really want to know the truth, and knowing that over 9 out of 10 researchers are working the other side of the street in a sea of disinformation, I pledge to you the truth about JFK. Go to Gary King YouTube channel and find out your true history.